Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. Fun episode tonight. Actually, it's a really good episode tonight. I'll tell you a little bit about that. I was in Raleigh, North Carolina at Drew Nagarwal's house with some of my good dental buddies that I met from continuing education, kind of having a mastermind weekend. And there's this place called the Beastmaster. And basically, picture this hole-in-the-wall joint in the middle of nowhere where all they serve is basically a ribeye cut, a baked potato, and a salad bar, and that's what you get. The only thing you actually tell them is how many ounces of ribeye you want, and they cut it right in front of you. So on the way to this place, it's about an hour drive from Tarun's house, and we had a phenomenal talk on creating a vision for your practice, whether to do an AEGD or GPR, how to survive after dental school, just kind of the key things you got to do to just pay your loans, make ends meet, how to get a job, being an associate. I mean, we really covered the gamut. It's about a 45-minute episode, but I will tell you, it was it's total gold. So listen to that and get excited. I also wanted to take a minute to tell everybody about this past weekend I had. I just got back from Spear Education out in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Spear Center, and I was blown away. I mean, absolutely unbelievable. I took facially generated treatment planning, which is kind of the first of their core workshops, which is a 3-day workshop, hands-on, where it's really like going back to the basics on steroids, learning how to look at teeth as a whole. From a treatment planning standpoint, it was unbelievable. You would get in the habit of looking at just decay and gum disease, and we kind of miss a lot of the pictures or miss opportunity to even talk about patients, what they like, what they don't like. So a big takeaway from it for me this past week was I've really implemented trying to get more and more full pictures, like DSLR camera quality pictures on everybody, especially new patients when we're doing those comprehensive exams, to take the time to really identify what the patients don't like about their smile, what could we be doing differently. And then really bringing in then the specialists and other interdisciplinary people that if I can't do it, to kind of partner with them. So really blown away. I cannot wait. I'm doing the second workshop, already signed up in September, on occlusion. So, you know, y'all have heard a lot about the CE we take, and we're big CE junkies, and really excited about kind of starting my Spear journey, because I do think that it's something that's going to impact me way beyond just like adding a technique or something to my arsenal, if you will, but actually going to really change the way that I do dentistry and kind of a comprehensive approach. So I'm super excited about that. If you haven't checked out Spear Education, Spear Online, go online, check it out. We'll definitely be talking about that more in coming episodes, but I did want to touch base on that just because it was a phenomenal weekend. I had a great time, met a lot of cool people at the course, and I'm super excited about kind of implementing stuff from that into our practice. Third and final thing, and then we're going to get the episode going. I did want to definitely want to touch on exciting. We will be at Hinman. We cannot wait. We hope to see all of you in Atlanta, March 22nd, 23rd, 24th, I believe. We have a booth this year, booth number 855. We're right by the lounge. I think that's where they serve the cocktails too, which is fantastic. And yeah, we'll be there live recording at Hinman. The Hinman Dental Meeting in Atlanta, Georgia. And we'd love to see you, love to give you, we're going to have t-shirts and koozies, the whole nine yards, but it'll be fun. We're going to be live recording. So stop by, say hello. We'd love to record with you. Can't wait. So without further ado, here is the ride to the Beastmaster. I hope you all enjoy.
You got to make 42 on your tail.
All right, Peter, where are we going? Why do I can't hear myself?
I can hear you.
Oh.
I can hear myself. Whoa.
So Sully, you have two things, right? The little small input thing and then the recorder.
No.
Is that what people call it these days?
What do you have? Just the H4 recorder?
I just have the H6 and the mics.
So then how are we hearing it?
I have a splitter.
That's what I'm saying. You have that too, right?
Yeah, splitter. Yeah.
It is a pretty sweet setup.
The Behringer splitter, yeah.
The Behringer 500 splitter.
You can track how many downloads you get.
I should get one of these for the bedroom.
And where they came from and what type of device they used.
Peter, you and your boyfriend don't need one of these.
You keep Roger out of this. Roger.
Peter, what did you think of Benji's talk today?
I liked it. I mean, it's Benji.
There's some direct download.
Are we recording?
Vast majority is iOS.
Have you implemented any of the vision stuff since last time?
Yeah. Vision boards are, have been huge for us. I think it all starts personally, going back to the vision and the leadership. I think dentists, we kind of have we're innately not born with good leadership skills. And I think that's something that you don't get taught in school. I think it's something that it's hard to learn. Most of us don't like doing it. Most of us don't put the time into doing it. But I think that's why most of the stuff we do at work, people don't like it. And it's because of our leadership skills.
How did your team respond when you started trying to like have that discussion?
They were surprised. So I first started with getting their opinion about me as a leader, and I told them to do their own vision boards, and then we approached it as, let's see what you want to do, a 5-year, and then approached it with, what can I do to help you get there? And then turned it on, and then, well, here's what my personal vision board is. Here's what the vision board for the office is.
Thanks for your visions, but this is my vision.
Yeah. So I think you involve the team, you get their opinion, and that's what I did. And ultimately, then you make the decisions.
What if you graduate, though, and like, you don't know your vision?
I don't think anybody knows their vision.
Did you know your vision when you graduated? No, I don't know. I was just trying to, you know.
Well, we talked about this. That's why I did a GPR. And we talked about this, and I think it's a great advice for people in school. You're so worried about money, and understandably so. But at the same time, you know, the dentistry part is what's going to make you the money. So you got
to. Hey, is this podcast just you two, or
is it GPR?
I mean, I just want to know.
Hang on, though. Is a GPR really going to help you figure out your vision?
That's a great point.
I think it's just going to delay the inevitable.
I think you get pressured into coming out of school. I think it's nice if you have somebody to show you the ropes. Otherwise, it's easy to get pressured into making money, which I feel like gets you into bad habits. And then you concentrate on production.
But couldn't you find an associateship where you are being given the guidance that you need?
Completely agree.
What I'm hearing, though, is that's harder and harder to find.
It's very hard.
No, but it's not harder to find. People are just lazy about looking.
Oh, you may be right.
They're lazy about looking or lazy about doing once they get it.
And or they're not clear about what they're looking for. Now, one thing I would say in response to you, Pitard, on this is I would argue that going to an AGD or a GPR or whatever it may be teaches you to be more academic and more non-real life practice based.
So two quick points. I think AGD is a fifth year of dental school, so I would advise against that. GPR is more, you get complicated cases, you get to work with an assistant, and each of them is different.
Because yours is not associated with a dental school, correct?
Right. And a lot of them now, New York I know has it, you have to do a GPR to get licensed. So a lot of them are becoming more...
But that's stupid to begin with. Just make dental school 5 years, if that's what you want.
I think as far as learning to do, working with an assistant, having an actual schedule where you see 8 patients a day, I'm not saying you can't do this without doing a GPR. I think going back to your point, T-Bone, I think part of it is people don't know what they're looking for out of school, but I think part of it is people that hire associates, they don't know what they want in associates.
Right, they're not
either.
Clear themselves.
Right.
So my story is
a disaster.
It took me 4 times to figure out what I wanted.
Right. And would you say you felt confident going into it that you knew what you wanted?
No, I would say that, no, yeah, I guess egotistically, yes. But no, I mean, I didn't know what I wanted, but I just said, okay, I'll start with the easiest. I want somebody who has a personality like me, which was a total disaster.
Well, I think also a lot of times people bring on an associate because they see a need in their practice to make more money. And I think people bring an associate with the mindset of, I need to mentor this person. I think it's more of a monetary... A lot of times. I think that's why it's harder for us.
A lot of the time we hire to fill a need.
Right.
We're filling a need in practice.
That's a great way of putting it. Versus considering it as a, I don't know.
Transitional thing?
Or building a practice, right? Yeah. It's either transitional, fill a need. It's not a long-term planned out stuff or move that a lot of dentists take the time to plan out.
You know how big of dorks we are, by the way? I mean, we're in a 14-passenger bus.
This is super
on the way to
you need to take a
steakhouse.
Picture of this.
On a Saturday night, and we are podcasting on the bus.
This may be an all-time low.
This is incredible. Well,
I mean, it doesn't
don't,
get fucking
why,
worse than
why
this.
Would you spell it out that way?
But T-Bone,
I am drinking milk.
So why? Okay, so I want to touch on something you talked about earlier today about the three kind of phases of trying to figure shit out. Basically.
From goal setting, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I
have lots of three phases of things.
You do. But the other three phases are...
Short-term goals.
Short-term goals, which we defined as survival.
Survival.
Which I defined as survival.
Well, let's explain that, because we had a Twitter...
Let's hold on. Yes, I want to define it, but let's go through all three. So look, real quick, sorry. There are three types of goals that we need to set. One is a short-term goal. which, and by my definition, or the way I look at it, is about what does it take to survive? Then we have medium-term goals, which I've defined as creating diversification in your life. And then we have long-term goals, which are goals about creating flexibility and freedom.
And so what I would like to kind of talk through here, if y'all don't mind, is what I find, I think, is one of the hardest things, because obviously, like, we're talking primarily to new graduates and dentists and younger dentists, is that I think a lot of them get caught in survival mode and don't know how to get out of survival mode because they're not spending enough time looking at their longer goals.
No, I wouldn't even say enough time. They're not spending
any
hardly
time.
Any time. And or they get caught into the concept of always forcing a vision. And one of the challenges with vision is that it is truly a very long-term goal, correct? By definition, a vision is typically a long-term goal. So sometimes we need to take a step back. And part of the conversation that we had towards the end of the morning was about defining how much time or energy we put into, how much of our focus we put into each phase. So, like, for example, go back what you said, Sully, about the typical new grad or even in dental school. Yes, they need to spend the vast majority of their time on survival, but it should never be more than 80%.
Well, and that's what happens. It ends up compromising, I think, their potential for future gain because they don't look beyond the short-term, just make it to the next day.
And then let's go a little bit further with that. Part of the problem with survival is the decisions we make in our outside life that make us always stay in survival mode. So, for example, if I were to clarify survival a little bit more, survival is almost always just monetarily focused.
Can I add to that to clarify survival? So survival would be, as an example, you get out of school, you have your debt payments, you want to, you know, you have bills you need to pay, and your primary goal in your professional career is to cover those bills. And that's what we're talking about when we say survival. And then that ties into the personal choices, because if your survival bill is $5,000 a month, let's say, of which $2,000 are going on a nice fancy car that you look for, then
I don't think anybody really buys $2,000 cars.
You know what I mean? That is a bad example, right? A private jet. So, but that's where priorities come, where people get bogged down in the short term goals and don't really spend time. And I think we're guilty of that too. That it's not, but it's easier to get into that short-term mode.
So to me, the takeaway I would say on survival is do everything in power to keep your survival number as low as possible. And then anything that you start making above survival, stay in the number of survival mode at least 2 years longer than you think you need to. So when you first start making excess money, don't suddenly enhance your survival spending. Start putting that money towards midterm.
You live like a dental student.
And long-term goals. Absolutely. So, I lived like a dental student for 2 to 3 years.
So can I ask you guys that? Because I feel like that's my... If I was coming out of school, I'd be like... And I see a lot. What's your advice on people paying off their loans quickly? So being in survival mode where you take the extra money above that and investing it in paying off the loans versus spending...
So what is your... So I have a quick answer to that is... If you're spending 80% of your time in survival mode, you should do no loan excessive repayment. If 80% of your time is in survival mode, if you're at a point where survival is pretty easy and it only takes 20%, 30% of your energy to survive, then you have an excess amount of money.
So talk more though. What does that look like when you move from 80% survival to 20% to 30% survival?
So for this conversation, for our target audience, let's focus just on the monetary aspect of it, because that's the number one survival mode. So let's say, and I need your guys' help on this. What is the prototypical monthly nut for anybody coming out of dental school for student debt, for basic, you know, reasonable living, a basic reasonable car, and basic reasonable bills? In other words, what does it take me to live and repay back?
I would say, because tuition is what? Anywhere from 40 to 70 these days?
So let's call it $400,000 in debt. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So debt with service on that would be what? $3,000, $4,000 a month?
I think if you take $10,000 a month is a very generous,
but that's
livable.
That's not survival. You'll never get out of survival mode because a dentist coming out of school, but number one, to have $10,000 in debt mode, sorry, debt
expenses.
$10,000 expenditure, you have to make $14,000 to $15,000, and then you multiply that by 12, and suddenly you're at $160,000, $170,000. So it's illogical to have $10,000 as a monthly nut. So your monthly nut has to be somewhere in the $5,000-$6,000 ballpark. Okay, because so if you take that $5,000-$6,000, let's call it $6,000, suddenly we're at $72,000 a year. Take away taxes, sorry, add on taxes and payroll and all that stuff. Suddenly you're at probably $90,000-$95,000, correct?
Easy,
right?
Yeah, easy.
Okay, so let's even call it 95, 100 grand.
Let's call it 100.
Let's call it 100.
Okay, so 100 grand. So what that gives me is that gives me 20 grand a year above and beyond survival. So that's how I look at it as 80%. So now as I move forward in my career and I can consistently depend on making, let's say, 150. Okay, if I keep my expenditures at that $6,000-$7,000 level per month, $6,000 level per month, suddenly survival looks like 50%. And now that extra money that I get, that extra bit, now I would equally divide that. Actually, I would probably skew that towards the medium-term goals, which is diversification. And diversification for a dentist coming straight out of school is all about expanding your communication skills and your learning skills and your education.
Or overall
skills.
Education.
Education, right? So a vast amount of your money has to go into expanding that set, which is via CE.
That's exactly what I was asking, because I feel like that's the math that a lot of, and I think we can say we're there, that you got out of school and the last thing you want to invest is in CE.
The last thing you want to spend money on is school.
Right. Is that right. Truly the mindset of somebody coming out of school?
Yes.
Yep. So, not for everybody, but
the majority.
The majority, yeah.
They just want to spend the extra 5 or 10% on something different.
Exactly.
They want to spend it on something
for 4 years. Yeah. You don't want to
learn. But then they'll be in survival mode for a very long time.
Yes. Right. And that's the point. They aren't able to see this.
I mean, was that a good exercise for you guys today?
Yeah.
I think it's huge.
When's the last time you guys looked at it in that way?
Never.
Yeah. It was good because I think what's happening to a lot of us is we're getting caught up in medium goal land, and we kind of keep chasing after medium goals and without looking at the long term, and therefore we're almost like a hamster on a wheel.
But I will say I saw a lot of myself. I wish I would have figured out my short term goals a lot sooner, and I didn't. And I think a lot of people, I mean, correct me if you guys are wrong, but I think that's the part that slows down a lot of people. And it's getting worse because the amount of debt you have keeps hanging over your head.
Yeah, that's bullshit, though. That's a cop-out answer.
I completely agree with you.
I'm not saying it's not real.
But I don't think if you take the time to think about it, I think it's something that's easily your default mode.
Because what happens, though, right there, right, is that you stay in survival mode.
Sure, exactly.
Because you don't really realize that you're getting out of survival mode because you're spending it on other stuff, so you don't have you never have the excessive income to spend on
stuff. That's exactly
it. So let's back up a second, okay? So, sure, we can beat this part to death, but now let's give them some actionable items, okay? So I think one of the things that we saw when EB went today was that the goals were more action items and not outcome goals, right? So to me, the common theme we saw today is that our goals were action items and not what we wanted the outcome to be. So, for example, an outcome would be, I want to work 20 days a month. Okay, that would be a goal. Not that I would agree with that as a survival goal, because as survival, you should work how many of the days you got to. But that would be an outcome. And then you would look at the action steps that go there. So, hey, I want to produce 20 grand a month. That means I got to do $1,000 a day, blah, blah, blah. And too many of us, our action goals are, I want to build a website. And to me, that's not a goal. That is a step.
But a step in the process.
And to take that to the next level or tie it into the short term, I think that's exactly coming out of school how you need to think is figure out how much you want to make and then...
How much you need
Well, how much you need, that is a good point. How much, and then think about your midterm goals and long-term goals, and then that will also help you find that position as an associate because you can ask those kinds of questions or you have a better lay of the land as far as expectations...
That's really easy to say now.
Yeah.
Looking back at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That's not something that you come out of school.
But part of that's
to do.
Defining what you want in your life, correct? And then, okay, so it's easy. So here's what I'll say. So that all boils down to discipline, correct? And it's easy to say we need to be more disciplined. But the truth is all you have to do is be 20% disciplined. Because most people are 1% disciplined. So it's not like you have to be so damn disciplined that you have to be 80, 90, 100% disciplined. You just have to be a little bit disciplined.
I would say it takes more discipline. I think it's just figuring out what the goal is, what the vision is. right?
And vision then, is long term. That's the problem.
Well, no, but I'm saying even the short term goal,
just success to be successful in dentistry to provide and move, and so to what ultimately funds, like, right? Because at its innate biggest, at the core of what most people when they graduate they need is they want to survive. They want to make a living as a dentist. So I would argue that the most, what is the first thing and the fastest thing they can do to help benefit them in making it a living as a dentist would be continuing education.
Or even, let's say you don't have the money for that. So I will go further with that. So,
but I don't think you need money.
No. So that's part of what I'm going to go to, right? So diversity is all about expanding your skill set and knowledge, correct? We all would agree with that. And our most mindset is right away that, oh, I got to spend money. I don't have money. I have debt. So I think the more we keep saying debt, the more we create that buzzword in the minds of people and we give them excuses. So what I would say is continuing education is not just going out and spending money in CE. It can also be finding a mentor and defining what you want from a mentor and maybe putting yourself in a position to get a mentor. And I think also a lot of
people... Or online.
Yeah,
online.
But online's an option. I would still rather have a mentor than go online and learn.
And that's a great point. I met a guy last weekend who he's like less than like 10 months out of school, and he's gone around to every specialist in his area and basically befriended them and like asking questions and trying to basically...
And wanted to watch and observe.
Right. And so, but when you don't do that, I mean, you're just losing opportunities.
So you just got to be proactive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The early time of your career is when you can be incredibly hungry, incredibly driven.
You have time to do it.
Yeah.
That's a good point too. Right.
So, you know, it's when we come back to the mentoring, and I think people just need to define what it is they want. They have no earthly idea what they want to a certain degree sometimes. And then go and see different things, different options. And I think the biggest thing is you got to network. And there's nothing online learning creates this vacuum where you're not meeting people. So the analogy I'll give is online learning is the equivalent of being book smart. So how many of us remember the person in dental school that was an unbelievably book smart person, but couldn't talk their way out of anything, right? Well,
they're an orthodontist now. So, yeah.
But they couldn't talk, you know, they just couldn't talk and communicate to people. And online learning creates that mentality and people become book smart and not implementation smart.
I think that's also tying into when you're in dental school, advice to anybody in dental school is go try and start doing that early. Not once you're out, but explore, contact, shadow, anything you can do to get as much information.
Experience.
Because it's just exactly the sooner you figure it out or the sooner you get most information you can.
So I'm going to redirect this conversation a little bit just because I have three people here who, JP, you're always looking for associates because you're expanding practices and that sort of thing. And then Peter and Tebow, both of y'all are at a point where y'all have mentioned this weekend how you're looking to bring on associates.
And I see it. I teach.
You do.
I teach
so them, my yeah. question would be is what are you looking at from a new graduate dentist standpoint that makes them someone that you want to hire? And what can they do to be a better applicant that makes them a desirable person to be hired?
So, I'll, if you don't mind, I'll give a.
We knew you would lead, so we'd let you lead.
I don't want to lead then.
Oh, JP, you lead.
Okay, I'll lead.
Okay, T will lead.
No, I just want to put a different twist on it. Okay, for someone like me,
change the question.
No, but I'm not changing the questions. I'm answering your question
okay,
a different
good.
Way.
You're good.
So my twist is that I personally will not hire a new graduate.
Okay.
Okay. But I should be, in most people's mind, a great place to work. So what I would suggest to people is the decisions you make the day out of school and how what you do for the first 1 or 2 years will dictate whether or not or how I perceive you as being able to come into a practice like mine.
Okay. So expand on that more though, because so what is it that you feel like someone is... after a couple years, now warrants being interviewed by you to be hired, right?
I'm not saying interviewed necessarily. I'm just saying at this point, you have some idea of what you want to be.
So that's the big thing is that's what holds you back from hiring someone as a new graduate is just the lack of kind of a vision?
No, it's just the lack of experience, the lack of clarity, the lack of communication skills, the lack of knowing what they should tackle and what they shouldn't tackle.
There's a lack of emotional maturity. and it only comes with time.
And they also are stuck in survival mode. A person that's stuck in survival mode or significantly
that is
survival
hard,
mode,
that's hard, yeah.
There's, and they wouldn't survive. They wouldn't begin to get me at all, or they wouldn't be able to even get my team members at that stage. So what I would look for is, what have you been doing the last 2 years? Have you been hopping from practice to practice to practice? Have you been stuck at a Medicaid type of practice? Have you been doing lots of part-time jobs at different practices with a good explanation behind that? Have you come to me? Like, for example, I interviewed a dentist, an initial talk conversation with a dentist.
Beer boy.
Who's coming back. And he brought me a portfolio of cases he's done.
That's pretty good.
Wow, that's impressive.
Right?
That so impressive. I actually, Devon, you'll have to give me props a little bit. I actually, that was a big point in my my presentation last weekend when I was with a student. So I said, how awesome would it be if you took pictures in dental school of your work and then you were able to take that to a job interview? I mean, I think that blows people away.
Absolutely. I mean, art students do that all the time, right? You have a portfolio of the projects you've worked in. It's
every other job
amazing.
Does that. Yeah.
It's amazing that we don't do it.
And so I can finish out on my part is this person just again is to me, everything's about your intention and the effort that you show that you want. So the person that came to my practice for an interview had done his or her research about our practice. So he knew that I had a podcast and listened to a few podcasts. He knew some of the things that I was non-negotiable about and negotiable about. And to me, there's positives in that. The positives, he understands that I have a crystal clear, generally speaking, a crystal clear vision of what I want. And also that allows me to weed out people that would never survive in that environment.
Oh, and that's what's so crazy for you, T-Bone, is like, frankly, you lay it out so obviously that you think that like at some point when they're even applying to work for you that they would have an idea of what they're getting into.
Yes, that's why I don't interview nearly as many as most, but we do interview some. But my point in this, because I don't want to belabor the point, I want Peter and John, who have probably a better perspective than me, but my perspective is, so for really certain types of practices, they're not going to hire somebody out of school. And if you intend to be a lifetime associate, or if you intend to say, hey, it's going to be 4, 5, 6, 7 years before I want to own or operate my own practice, then what I would look for is, what have you been doing that 1 or 2 years after dental school? How have you built your resume? How have you become more needed in the practice? What kind of CE have you take in all of those things?
JP?
Well, I've just got to echo all that because the new grad, and not to beat up new grads, but they really have no clue what they're doing when they come out. Let's just be honest. You come out of school and it's a struggle.
You know, they don't like to hear that, John.
Well, hey, you know what? The fact of the matter is that you have to come out and you have to get experience. There's no way that you can come out of school and just expect to walk into an associateship at a higher level practice and succeed. I don't think that's setting the right expectation. So going out and getting some experience at a incredibly busy practice where you can refine your really basic skill set, get really good at basic restorative work, get good at taking teeth out, get good at communicating with your patients, take some CE. I feel the same way as you, T-Bone, that you need to show me what you've been doing the last few years with your life. Have you been happy making a lot of money but not reinvesting in yourself? Because to me, that speaks volumes about what kind of person you are and what I should expect when you come and work.
So JP, how many associates you hire now?
So I've hired I've had 6 associates, 7 associates.
What would you say is what's been the kind of, if you had to say, the weakest thing that you've seen that they've struggled with?
The communication aspect is definitely the hardest thing. And it's the toughest thing to work on too. Because
and no one tells us when we graduate that we need to like take CE for communication.
Yep.
Because some people, because the reality is,
it is common sense, but even this weekend, I mean, we've all done this, most of us done this for a while now. You're always fine tuning that, right? You're always adding, you're always learning, you're always improving. There was a great point that Dr. Ben said today, and where they do quality control and they tape. They review the tape. And I never thought about it, but I mean, think about it. I almost thought about it like a sport. Right, you're the rookie on the team, and you might be super talented, but you're still gonna have to put your due in. And then they videotape you. You kind of try and improve You look
it's
at positive
film study,
negatives.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's something you could even do in dental school, honestly. You could have a recorder in your pocket and you could walk into a thing and present a treatment plan.
And then role play.
You just record the audio.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually.
And even today we talked about role play, which
and you don't even need fancy equipment. You can just use your phone to do that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I mean, when I went to school, phones didn't exist.
Gosh, you're old.
No, they had a cord. They had a cord and they were stuck to the wall.
No. Phones had antennas when I went to school.
They were like a brick.
How was that? You never did tell us about that pigeon recall system. You just sent a pigeon out and then the message exactly. And they didn't respond to back.
Yeah, so that's really what I'd be looking for somebody that I'd be trying to hire. I've done the same thing with brand new grads,
that you're like, man, that's a good one to have or something that...
See, I would...
It's being prepared. It's being prepared for the interview, being prepared to present yourself, knowing about the practice. I mean, I interviewed a couple of people and they didn't even know that I had multiple practices. And if you just type my name in, like the four practices come up and like all of my NPI numbers pop up. Like,
yeah, and they don't even know that.
Yeah.
So I would say that's about being professionals. Being a professional.
It seems to be a standard, but...
Because you would never apply to a company without researching them if you're in any other profession, right? You wouldn't apply to...
Yeah, but professional is many more things.
No, but I'm saying if you thought about like corporate America, when you apply to a company, you do research on it. So it is funny how you apply to places without really doing your research on it. I would take it a little easier. I would say attitude is a huge thing. I think experience absolutely matters, but... Attitude you can't teach, experience you can garnish it. I think expectations, because you will have to put your dues in at the beginning. You're not going to work 2 days a week and make a killing. And then I think that definitely comes out pretty easily, either through an interview or early on being an associate.
So I want to go back to something Johnny said, and that was, you know, what are you doing with your time and all of that? Like, I would argue that part of one thing that you could do to stand yourself out and win is don't work 5 days a week. Work 4 days a week and take that fifth day and go to various specialist office randomly, rotate through the week.
Because making $200 more is not...
Or $500 more per day. I mean, the value of that, if you imagine if you went to a specialist office every week for 45 weeks.
That would be like
one day
that
a week.
Would be like a daggum, yeah.
And what would that say about you and where would that put you and how much better would you be? And so, again, it comes back to, for me, it's always going to rotate back to the choices that we make in survival mode as to what is our most important thing.
Well, and you're also big on the fact that you're challenging them to go do something, like no one's bringing it to you. Like everything they're asking is an active thing. They have to make a decision to go and do.
I think it's also the mindset. I think when you graduate dental school, I think it's easy to get into, I'm done learning, right? I did this, I jumped through all the hoops. Now it's all about, let's just make money and enjoy life. But, and so I teach a Midwestern, but there's a line. It's kind of like, don't call staff, it's team members. There's a line. We don't teach students, we teach learners. And it's really true that you're a lifelong learner. And that you got to get that
mindset.
So
you guys create the problems of the millennials.
I like that.
Because you're
like
a learner.
I do.
A student means you're done with
school. What do
you call
it when somebody goes takes the shit? Expectoration from the ass?
Derriere.
You know what I do love that none of y'all said, though? Was like none of y'all said, none of y'all asked anything about what grades were. I mean, none of y'all asked like what, like,
no.
Really, it's funny, like the things that you focus on and like try to like do. And the reality is like when you graduate, what doctors want to hire in associates is
personality.
It's totally counterintuitive
and
to what
clinical
you think
skills.
That, yeah. Yeah. Well, clinical skills is huge. So
well, let me ask you this. How many in your class, the top 10 people in your class, how many of them were really good clinicians?
The reality is they're probably almost still in school.
Dude, I have no idea.
Well,
I never saw their work 6 years or 12 months.
So here's a thing. I would rather have the hardest working C-minus student that just barely got through, but he busted his ass or her ass to get through school than the person that coasted through with A's, graduated number one in the class, and doesn't know jack about how to talk to people.
Well, look at my boy Paymon. He's like the epitome of that. He like freaking, you know, barely made it, had a freaking great time. And then when he got out, it was like, just got the keys to the ignition and you know, took more CE and hours and everything. And launched his career off that. I mean, that, you know, just because of what he did.
I had a thought about something and I just forgot it because Johnny opened his mouth.
Oh, great. Now you're blaming me.
Took away my time.
The reason I said that is because in my class, it was the same. Some of the best clinicians, they're my buddies too, but you see their work and they're great. They're average, you know, but they were, I mean, I'd have them work on me any day. No pun intended.
Yeah, you would. That's good. All right. What else you got for me?
Sully, are we off base with millennials, you think?
Frankly, here's my thing. And if I really have to be honest, I just, my thing is,
although I don't think you're a good cross-section of
that. Well, that's probably maybe some degree, but the reality is all generations are technically the same. I think what hurts millennials the most is that we have, because of social media, we get a little more scrutinized because the shitty part of our generation gets exposed more than your shitty part of your generation did. So I think that we see a lot more of the worst when the reality is we have a lot of people that are doing a great job. Because you know, just as much as I know, is that because of technology...
Actually, I know a lot more than you.
Well, but my argument to you is that you are the outlier actually in your generation more than I'm the outlier in mine. And what I mean by that is like there are more people like me who are hungry and we're running and gunning and we're going to utilize technology to destroy. And what I mean by that is just we'll overtake... We'll be able to do more dentistry than your generation because yours is slower to adapt and to.
I want to do a separate podcast on that.
Okay.
Because let me show you what I wrote down while I was in India. Let me get my notes out here. Content ideas on Evernote.
Wait, can I go real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think you're absolutely true because if we had cell phone cameras back when we were growing up and some of the stuff that, you know,
Think about what you would have gotten in trouble for, T-Bone, if Tinder was around when you were back in your little Indian boy days.
Swipe left. Right. Grinder.
I know if Benji had Bumble, he would have been screwed.
Oh, yeah. He might not have fallen down the hole.
That's true.
What were we just talking about?
You had a note in India.
Millennials versus technology taking over. But to your point, I think this generation, and I'll kind of throw myself, I think we'll throw most people on this bus in that group. We are a very lucky group because think about if you were a dentist in the 50s, right? 60s, 70s, 50s, how many things changed, right? From 50s, 60s, maybe you got a fax machine.
Yeah.
Maybe you got a color TV. 70s, maybe you got a video camera, right? 80s, maybe you got a computer. Maybe.
You're 10 years ahead on everything, by the way. No.
But you know what I mean, right? Like technology didn't change. And then all of a sudden now, the rate of change, I mean, every 6 months, you have 3D printing.
And you know what it boils down to?
Not even.
Access to information. We have a greater access to information than any generation ever before. So the reality is that, yes, a lot of people will abuse that and not use that. But there's enough people that are going to use it, and we'll cultivate that to where that's where I mean, and it's not that our generation is better than the next. That's what every generation ultimately does that to the previous one, right? I mean, they're just that's part of the evolution of what.
But
we
that
do.
And that's a huge advantage. Before in the 80s, 90s, even you wanted to learn something, you wanted to learn how to shift teeth, you had to do a specialty. That information was locked behind, if you will, these gates, right? Now it's really the time and effort and money you put into it. Which is fantastic.
Do you think some specialties will be weeded out because of that,
yes,
in the future?
Absolutely.
Like within 15, 20 years? You think there'll be this many specialties?
I'm sorry. If you're in dental school, my personal opinion, you guys can go, I don't know why you would go into prosthodontics right now.
Well, I think that's
why,
a simple one. Yeah?
Why would you?
Hey, Sully, I want to record a podcast from my podcast. And here's what I wrote down. I said, I wrote down the millennials are coming. The segment of dentistry that's in the most trouble. Okay, I break the dentistry down into three segments. That's the age 26 to 35, age 35 to 50, and age 50 plus. I think I'm 42, and I think the segment of dentistry that's in the biggest trouble is age 35 to 50 because we become complacent and we have too much time left that we have to sustain ourselves. And the millennials are going to come and they're going to kick our asses if my generation doesn't get into gear.
Because they're going to have to do so much more to get ahead for that big part of their career that's left, right?
Well, yes, but also because, you know, if I'm 60, for example, dude, mm-hmm. I only got to make it 5 to 10 more years.
Yeah.
I can coast through that.
Yep.
But if I'm 42, I still got 20 years left, right? And a shit ton can happen in 20 years. And the millennials will, every generation, one thing that is consistent is they scrunch the timeline a little bit. So what took my generation 20 years to achieve, the millennial generation would achieve in 10 years. Okay, what took the generation before me, like when I started in dentistry, it took you 20 years to become an expert, perceived expert in the industry.
You could do that. You could do that very quickly now.
When I started, it took five to seven years. Today, it takes a year.
Okay. You post every single case you do, and you start doing all that?
Yeah, because our mastermind group is so good at that, by the way.
We're the best at it.
I posted today, though.
Does that make sense? So I want to do a talk on that, and that's I would love to have three generations, me, you, and is anybody in here old? Oh, no, we don't do old people.
No, yeah, we don't do old.
But I think going back to what Solly was saying, I think this generation, if you will, whoever's coming out, it's prime because there's so many dentists that are in their 60s and 70s. And I get it. It's hard to invest in technology that you don't necessarily understand at that point of the game. So once they retire or opportunities to buy their patient base, there's such a great opportunity right now because it is kind of the change of the guard in a way that, and it's easy to invest in technology if you're just starting out because you get to use that technology for decades to come.
So can we talk about the student loan debt load though?
Yes,
real
but
quick?
One thing. But let me make one comment before we do that in regards to this whole generational thing and whatnot. To me, what I do see with us though is it's going to be very polarizing, and what I mean by that is there's some people who are going to take stuff like whatever it is, and they're going to run with it and take advantage of the situation. But there's a lot of people who are going to, which is a good conversation to transition the student loan debt, will be so bogged in and stay in the survival mode, to kind of loop back to the beginning, that will hold them back. I know it is. You created a buzzword. That's literally what I'm going to do is copy your shit and repackage it. I'm stupid to do anything other than that. Okay.
So So I'm going to go the other way from what T-Bone said about the millennials coming to get his generation, because with the number of students that are graduating now, okay, dental student graduation rates, Peter, you're in the education industry,
class
in
Midwest,
right?
Has 130.
And how many more students are graduating now than ever before, and how much more student loan debt do they have than ever before? So
our population's growing too.
But we're about to see just this influx of dentists that are going to have this.
You think there's a wave of? I don't know.
There's going to be a wave of dentists that are crippled by debt that are suddenly going to make really poor decisions based on that.
Define crippled by debt.
Yeah, I don't like that term. It's an investment.
Seriously,
because I think you're enabling them a little bit.
But what they are is they're mentally crippled. Whether it's debt or stupidity or just lack of focus, they're just mentally crippled.
I agree,
crippled.
But you know what? Hang on, though, because when you go into school, you sit there and say, okay, I know what it's going to cost to get out. That's fine. That's great. Whatever. And then you get out and you realize, holy shit, I've got $500,000 that I have to pay back. And that can be really overwhelming
JP,
to some people.
It's mentally crippling.
What's your liability right now, though, JP?
It doesn't matter what my liability is.
Has anybody gone to jail because I don't let that mentally
handicap myself.
So why would you say things like that? Why would you say to people that it's going to mentally cripple? It's going to cripple them.
No, because that is the easy.
You're saying that's the mindset.
That's the easy mindset to fall into, and that's my fear. I'm not saying it will happen. That's my fear, though.
I have a lot of fears.
Yeah?
One of them is meat sweats tonight.
I've got that fear. I have a fear of spider webs. You started talking about spider
jogging.
Webs, and now I'm...
I think it's called yogging.
Yogging.
I have a fear of a 7 a.m. walk in the cold again.
Yeah. 7:30, I got to push back 30 minutes.
It won't be as cold.
Anyway, so I'm more of an optimist. I see where JP's coming
from. I'm an optimist about the profession.
It's a great time to do that.
It's the best time.
The variety...
Every year is the best year.
You can't get bored... Working with people is great. I know it's just you learn so much, it makes your day, and it's not all about the money. It's you make a difference, and that really means so much. I never realized that until.
No, you're right. So to JB, to your point, ultimately, because I mean, student loan debt is literally the number one discussed, number one curious question. Is it? And all, to all three, is it really just a mindset? I mean, is there really the situation that we have to realize?
It's 50-50. My name is Johnny.
Go explain to that.
What's the other 50? What do you mean? Mindset and
no, it's 50% mindset and it's 50% real.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. Having to make a payment is having to make a payment.
Yep.
Okay, and part of it is also, if you think about it, anybody, most 99% of people going to school have never had any debt whatsoever, outside of a little bit of credit card debt or whatever it may be. So you become burdened with it. And what you hear in our culture, probably from their parents and everybody else around them, is that debt is bad. And smart people will tell you that smart debt is not bad. It's actually very good.
Yep. Well, I think setting expectations going into school and just having a more realistic approach to it and saying, oh, not la-di-da, it's going to be a bunch of debt. That's fine. I'll pay it off real quick.
Sitting there
saying, okay, I'm about to make a real serious investment in my career. And I need to be prepared for X, Y, and Z afterwards. So starting to prepare for it way in advance.
And yeah. I would say as far as prepared, don't look at the average mean salaries of a dentist and expect they're going to hit that the first 3, 4, 5 years. If you do great, but, you know,
Let yourself be pleasantly surprised.
What's that? Well,
I said let yourself be pleasantly surprised if you make that.
Yeah.
I have so many wonderful pearls in this episode. I think I'm definitely smarter than all of you.
So thank you.
That wasn't one of them.
You lived a lot longer, so like I'd hope you'd have more pearls.
I would leave one last pearl for our people listening. Just have patience. Just slow down. Let it come to you. Partly let it come to you. Partly go make it happen. But be patient. Your time will come. Your time to make a lot of money will be there. Your time to make a lot of difference in the world will be there. Your time to build a lot of practices will be there.
Is he speaking to me right now?
Actually,
speaking to all three of us.
But I think going back to the shrinking time, I think that is. I'm really glad you brought that up because I feel like everything shrunk not only, like you said, just generationally, but also expectation wise. And I think you know, it's if you put effort in something and you don't see it fruition in 6 months, I think you know that's not a bad thing. You gotta look at the long run, and I feel like people have less patience.
Most people give up too early.
Absolutely.
But I think people too need to kind of before they get too crazy, they have to have proof of concept, right? Like you got to go out there and show you can do it.
I mean, well, you finished dental school, so that's
But like at the same time, like you know, before you build this like this mansion, because that's one thing our freaking generation loves to do is we love to build this badass practices and super expensive buildings and that's kind of like you're adding a lot of liability there you don't have to take on right away.
That is because you are impressionable and you're see what happens is people like me have to keep in perspective that when you're 42 and you've been doing this 18 years or 19 years at this point and you can get out there and you've made your money and you've become debt-free minus real estate, you can make an impression on people. And when we nonchalantly flaunt out things like, well, just spend the money, it's no big deal. Yes, it's no big deal to me, but to somebody hearing that when I was that age, that's what got me in trouble and almost made me go bankrupt year one out of school, out of year one in practice, is because I was listening to somebody that had a 20, 25 year head start on me and I didn't put into perspective and be realistic about what of that I can accomplish in the time.
And I think part of that is it's easy to get caught up in, you know, reps and people that will be like, oh, let's do a 9-operatory practice. You'll be fine.
Here's
financing. Yeah. I mean, you got to be smart about it.
But people that are doing it aren't going bankrupt. It shows you how great this profession is.
No, I agree.
You can go spend 15 grand on a website for a startup and be just fine.
As long as you're not an a-hole.
15,000 on a website going right.
Don't be an asshole. You'll be fine.
Oh, shit.
My Instagram guy.
Tarun, that was really insightful. That was really kind.
What?
Your last few statements were very kind.
Either.
You didn't yell. That was like Tarun 2.0.
It's T-Bone 2.0. I have to build a new brand.
That's amazing.
I have to start all over from scratch.
Well, by the way, what do you call a bear with no teeth?
I have no idea.
A gummy bear.
But on that note, off
Pitar,
to off
great
to,
advices.
To get some meat sweats, boys.
Meat sweats. To the meat sweats.
Good talks. Till next time.
Love you, Benji.
So hopefully y'all enjoy that episode. I thought it was a great episode. I did want to point out as well to, if you don't mind, like us on Facebook. If you'll follow that group, I'd love to get a millennial group going where we can kind of banter back and forth on things. Follow us on Instagram at Millennial Dentist, at Dr. Payray, and at Daniel Holsinger. And if you love the show, which I hope you do, and you made it this far, go leave us a review on iTunes. We would love that so much. That way more people can find us, and that would be great. All right, everybody. You work smarter, not harder. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.